Today is from Acts, the 10th chapter, or 9th chapter, verses 36 through 42. Now there was at Joppa a certain disciple named Tabitha, which by interpretation is called Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and alms deeds which she did. And it came to pass in those days that she was sick and died. And when they had washed her, they laid her in the upper chamber. And forasmuch as Lydia was nigh to Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent unto him two men, desiring him that he would not delay to come to them. Then Peter arose and went with them. When he was come, they brought him into the upper chamber. And all the widows stood by him weeping and showing the coats and garments which Dorcas made while she was with them. But Peter put them all forth, and kneeled down, and prayed. And turning to him to the body, said, Tabitha, arise. And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. And he gave her his hand, and lifted her up. And when he had called the saints and widows, presented her alive. And it was known throughout all Joppa, and many believed on the Lord.
Welcome to our second annual Colt Day. We're glad that you're here today, and if you're visiting with us, I hope that you'll be blessed by the time that we spend together. If you're visiting with us today, you may not know that in the fall we have something known as Giveaway Day, and we have a great crew that works together to make that happen, led by the Robinsons and the Folks and the Hendricksons and several other folks that work to make that happen. It was one of the things we started in the last couple of years is to try to have a coat drive this time of year, because this is the time when a lot of the stores are clearing out their winter apparel and putting things on sale, and as the expression goes, we get more bang for our buck, if you will. So we did that last year, this year, and so our goal today is 1,200 coats, and I don't know where we're at on that, and maybe we'll find out and let you know. Maybe tonight or maybe in our bulletin this week. But some of those coats are up here on the stage. Maybe you see a coat that you brought. And I want to say thank you for all the work that you have done in bringing these coats in and donating funds so folks can buy coats, or whether you picked them up yourself or had somebody else do it. You are making a difference in someone's life. I appreciate Glenn and her team and how hard they've worked, not only this morning, but all the days leading up to this, to make this possible. This morning, as we think about folks providing coats to make it possible for people to have a warm winter, I want us to go back in time to a woman that we are calling this morning the Giving Gazelle. We've been studying the book of Acts. If you're visiting with us, our theme this year is something to believe in. And so we've begun the year focusing to a great extent on the book of Acts, because it's a book about faith. It's about people coming to find something to believe in. And not only that they found something to believe in, but it changed how they lived their lives. It transformed the kind of person that they were. We're going to jump forward a few chapters this morning because I want what we look at to coincide with what we're trying to do today through the power and grace of God. I want us to think about a woman in Acts chapter 9 who gave coats to people who needed a coat. And she not only gave coats, but she made them herself. As we think about the Giving Gazelle this morning, I want us to use the letter D as our memory glue. And I want us to talk about deeds, death, and display. Deeds, death, and display. With that in mind, I hope you've got your Bibles open. Let's begin focusing on Acts chapter 9. I want to begin by looking at Acts chapter 9 and verse 36. And think about the deeds that were done in the life of this beautiful, beautiful woman. Look at there in verse 36. First of all, it says, Now in Joppa there was a certain disciple named Tabitha. As we look at a map, let's look at a map here on the screen showing us where Joppa is. Joppa is over on the coast of the Mediterranean. It was a port that was roughly somewhere around 36, 38 miles from the city of Jerusalem. Joppa was a very important port going all the way back into the Old Testament. For example, when Solomon built the temple and he brought in cedars of Lebanon from up north there along the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. They floated the logs down the Mediterranean coast to the port at Joppa, and then they carried them across land to Jerusalem for the building of the temple. It was the main seaport for the city of Jerusalem. In other words, if you wanted something to get to Jerusalem, Joppa is generally where they dropped it off from seafaring ships coming in from off the Mediterranean. You may recall the story of Jonah and how he was asked by God to go to Nineveh, but he didn't want to go to Nineveh. And the text says he got in a boat and basically tried to go as far away from where God wanted him to go as possible. The port he went to get on that boat and begin that fateful trip was at Joppa. So I just want you to see this is a port that was significant in the Old Testament and would have been significant in the New Testament as well. And again, it was a port that was roughly 36, 38, somewhere around there, miles from the city of Jerusalem. Let's look back at our text there in verse 36. It says, there was a disciple at Joppa by the name of Tabitha or Dorcas. And you have here her Aramaic name and her Greek name. And it wasn't terribly uncommon for folks to go by a couple of different names. You may think of Simon, who came to be known as Peter, or Saul, who came to be known as Paul. It wasn't terribly uncommon for folks to be called both by an Aramaic or Hebrew name and by a Greek name. Both of these names mean gazelle. In fact, many folks believe that they actually mean little gazelle, and we'll come back to that in a few moments. But it is consistent with a pattern in the ancient world of naming girls after beautiful and graceful animals. This was fairly common. And so this was just another example of that. As we think about her, what is significant about her is not only was her name graceful, and not only is she named after a beautiful and graceful animal, but her life was beautiful, and her deeds were gracious and caring and kind. Look, the text says that this woman was abounding with deeds of kindness and charity, which she continually did. The pattern of her life, and that's important to get here, this was not a one-time thing for her. The text is not saying that she did something nice for somebody once upon a time, or that now and then she would do kind deeds. But it's written in their language, and we can see it right there in the English language, such that it was a pattern of life. The idea is that she overflowed with kindness. She abounded with good deeds. And it was a continuous pattern in her life. It's the way she lived every day. Now we're going to find out one thing she did is, in particular, is respond to the needs of widows. I want you to think about how those who are caring and kind and compassionate come out, and they shine forth like stars in the night during difficult times. Now think about how the world responded to what happened in Haiti. And now we've got the earthquake that's taken place in Chile, which is believed to be, I think, one place I read, one of the top 10 earthquakes since we have started recording earthquakes and keeping records of those kinds of things. One report I saw said that the energy in this earthquake was 500 times greater than what was experienced in Haiti. And unfortunately, so far, we haven't seen near the level of loss of life, and that's probably due to some differences in building codes. But you've got at least 300 folks who've lost their lives. They say 1.5 million people have been affected. I've seen numbers all the way from 500,000 to 1.5 million have had damage to their homes or have completely lost their homes. But you know what I also have seen? I've seen the same things I saw at Haiti, the same things I saw in response to Hurricane Katrina, and the same thing I've seen in response to so many other disasters. I see people coming to help. I see professionals coming who have dedicated their lives to helping people in need. And I thank God that there are professionals who have decided to focus their energies on being there when people are facing a tragedy. But I've not only seen the professional rescuers respond, I've seen countless volunteers stepping up to the plate. But you know, that doesn't just happen when there's a natural disaster. I see it happening every day right here in this congregation and every day right here in this community. There are people going through personal disasters all the time around us, whether it's caused by the economy, by illness, by struggles in the family and relationships, abuse. All kinds of things happen to bring personal quakes in people's lives. And when those quakes come, when those disasters come, they need to know that somebody cares. In the congregation at Joppa, they knew, the widows knew when they were in trouble, there was a woman named Tabitha that cared. Life was difficult for a widow woman in the first century. I know that our country still has room to grow and improve in this area, but the reality is that ladies today have economic opportunities and life opportunities that far exceed the opportunities that would have been there for these widow ladies in Joppa. Once their husbands passed away, their means of making a living and bringing an income to support themselves would have literally plummeted to nothingness or almost nothingness. And for many of them, if they didn't have other family members that would take them in and help them and take care of them, it was a struggle to survive. Tabitha saw that need, and she met that need. She made helping people and doing good deeds a way of life. I'm reminded of Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, which says, "As we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, to all people, but especially those of the household of faith." That verse embodies the life of a beautiful woman named Tabitha. But having talked about her deeds, let's focus on the sad part of the story, the death of this beautiful woman. Let's focus our energies on verses 37 and 38 of Acts chapter 9. And notice what the text says, that she fell sick and died. It's interesting to me in a couple of ways how this is worded. First of all, it's almost as written as if it came on suddenly, and it may well have been so. It's also interesting to me that in our culture, when we talk about death and dying and things like that, we tend, you know, in our culture, I don't think we would have had one sentence to describe this. We would have gone into intimate detail and describe all the detail and the gore, if you will, of what had happened. But the text of the Bible often deals with death in very short sentences. It's not trying to magnify things. It's trying to just say, here's what happened and here's what God did about it. In their culture, they didn't have the life expectancy that we do. For example, when Paul lived into his 60s, to be 60 in their culture was considered to be very, very old. They didn't have the medical facilities and trained personnel and all the things that we have medically today. They didn't have that. It was a dangerous world and a dangerous culture in which to live in. Things that we might get medicinally that we would consider to be routine. Illnesses, problems, the break of a leg, things like that that happen in our world, and it's nothing more than a visit to a pediatrician or down to the emergency room, could mean the end of somebody's life in the first century when you don't have the medical technology to be able to address it. Very minor things to us were life-threatening to them. And so we don't know what happened to her, but she became ill and she lost her life. As we look at the text, it not only says that she passed away, but it shows us that they practiced the common burial procedures for their society. You know, wherever you go around the world, people have certain habits they go through when somebody passes away, and it's different from culture to culture. I found just living in the United States, you know, I think about living a large portion of my life in ministry in Kentucky and then living for several years down in Mississippi and then now being the last 10 or 11 years back up in Tennessee where I was born. All three of those states have different cultural practices when somebody passes away. Some reopen the casket at the end of the funeral services. Other states do not. Some, when they have the entombment or the burial at the graveside, the family leaves, they go eat a meal and they come back. In other cultures, they stand there and watch while the dirt is being filled in. In other words, every culture has its own practices. In their culture, they had their practices. It was common when someone passed away to wash the body so that they would be not just physically but ceremonially clean. In this case, some women would have come in and taken care of the body of Tabitha. The text doesn't specifically mention it here, but also they usually had a practice of putting spices on the body. You may call to mind what happened when Jesus was died and Nicodemus made it possible for those spices to be put on Him. In Jerusalem, the rule or law was you had to bury somebody the same day. They didn't have some of the practices that we have today to preserve a body. And so generally, they buried someone fairly quickly, which could make it tough for families. You really, before you could wrap your mind around what had happened sometimes, the loved one has already been buried. Outside of Jerusalem, it seems that their laws were looser. They didn't require, outside of Jerusalem, the person to be buried the same day. Some estimates are that as many as 3 days could be allowed. But generally speaking, in their culture, they did it fairly quickly, and if at all possible, they tried to have burial the same day. And that's what makes this fairly interesting when you look at how they responded and what they did. It says they put her on display in an upper room. A lot of their homes had flat roofs on them. And what they would do sometimes is they would basically come back and close in that upper portion and make a little attic room out of it. And a lot of times you'd have a little staircase that went around the outside of the house up to that little attic room that was basically added on the top of the house. This is likely the kind of room that she was put in, though we don't know exactly. She was put on display there, and folks from the community began to drop by to pay their last respects. The text says that Lydda was near Joppa, and so disciples heard that Peter was there. Now let's look at our map again, and I want you to look at Lydda in terms of Joppa. I've heard estimates all the way from 9 miles to 12 miles as to the distance between Lydda and Joppa. And that depends on exactly where Lydda is. It's a little bit of a guesswork, but they know at least the ballpark of where it is. It also probably has to do with whether you're talking about as the crow flies or whether you're talking about the road system. If you wanted to get on the road that went from Jerusalem over to Joppa, Lydda was 2 or 3 miles north of that road. So you went south a couple of miles and then you caught the road that was running northwest over to Joppa. It was a journey that would have taken 3 to 4 hours each way. So if two men are going to go to Lydda and get Peter, it's going to take the better part of a day for them to get over there and get him and to bring him back. Now, if we want to know why he was there, we can go back to Acts chapter 9, verses 32 and through 35. Peter was traveling through that region. He had stopped at Lydda, and he had found out about a man named Aeneas, a man who had been paralyzed for 8 years, bedridden, maybe had some accident, some work accident, I don't know. But Peter had healed him and was staying in the city. And the text says that the people in that village and in all of the surrounding area heard about what had been done. So it shouldn't surprise us that when Tabitha passes away, that somebody nearby who heard about her death also knew that Peter was 10 or 12 miles down the road. And so it was, they sent messengers for Peter. Look at the end of verse 38, I believe it is there. It says, they said, "Do not delay in coming to us." Now here's what's interesting. As we think about her death and they're sending for Peter, the question that comes into my mind, maybe it's not one that came into your mind, is why? Why are they sending for Peter? For example, did they expect him to raise this woman? Was there any reason to expect him to raise this woman? There is no evidence in the text of the book of Acts that any of the apostles to this point had raised anybody from the dead. Now we do know, going all the way back to Acts chapter 2, they had been performing signs and wonders. In chapter 3, we've got a man who's been lame from the womb over 40 years, chapter 4 of Acts tells us, and that Peter and John had healed the bones in his legs and brought him back to his feet. So the apostles had been doing amazing things. But I don't know of any biblical evidence that they had healed anybody yet. In fact, at least healed somebody in the sense of bringing them back from the dead. I would find it shocking if they had done something so amazing and it had not been mentioned anywhere in the book of Acts to this point. So did they have any physical evidence that led them to believe that Peter was going to raise this lady from the dead? I don't know that they did. Maybe that's what they expected him to do, maybe not. It also may have been that they just wanted his comfort and encouragement. They wanted him to be there to comfort the community. This is a woman that apparently, you know, was known and loved by everybody in this congregation. I think that's evident in the response of the widows at her funeral. And so it may have been they just wanted Peter there to comfort and to encourage. I mean, what better comfort could you find than to have an apostle of Jesus Christ Himself to come and speak to the congregation and encourage the family members and in their loss? I don't know. I don't know if they expected a funeral sermon and some words of encouragement or if they expected a miracle. But I do believe that they felt Peter could help. And they saw in him someone who could make a difference in a time of need. And I think that's a message to us, that we ought to be people who live in such a way that folks feel like we can make a difference in a time or need. All of us can do different things by the grace and power of God. All of us can make a difference when people are hurting. Let us so live and use the opportunities given to us that people will send for us and say, please come and do not delay. But then I want us to think about the display. I want you to notice what is found there as you look especially in verse 39. It says, all the widows stood beside him weeping and showing all the tunics and garments that Dorcas used to make while she was with them. He comes into this upper chamber where the body is lying, and there he sees widows standing all around. My guess is this is not a huge room. Maybe it was, but I don't picture it as such in my own mind. And so I picture a fairly small, cramped room lined with people, lined with these widow ladies. Their hearts are breaking. And when it talks about what they're showing, they're showing both undergarments and outer garments. And I don't, when I talk about that, like you're talking about the difference between a shirt and an outer coat. So it's kind of like they're showing a dress and then showing a little tunic or coat that might have gone over the top of it. But what's interesting is the way it's worded in their language, it's worded as if it's referring to them. It's in the middle voice, and the idea is that they're talking about things she made, tunics and garments that relate to them. And many believe, because of the way it's worded in their language, they were actually wearing the clothing. Maybe you've been to a funeral sometime. I think about a friend of mine who had given me a knife. And I remember when I talked to his widow talking about that knife and saying, you know, I remember when your husband gave this to me. We used to go fishing together, and I want you to know how much our friendship meant, and I want you to know how much this knife means to me. Maybe you've done that before. Maybe you've brought a picture of something that the two of you did together, a great fun time you had, and you wanted the families to see that fun time you had together, a picture maybe they had never seen before, or you brought something they had made, whatever the case may be. That's what they're doing. In other words, I think the text is saying that they had on garments she made. And they're walking up to Peter and saying, she made this coat. She made this dress. She did that for me because she loves me, because she loves us. And so I want you to just think about what a touching and moving scene that would have been. I'm reminded of James chapter 1 and verse 27, where it says, pure and undefiled religion before God is to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. And that word visit doesn't mean just to show up for a social visit. It means to go and see what their needs are and to meet those needs. In other words, these widows are saying that she practiced, that Tabitha practiced James chapter 1 and verse 27. But then I want you to notice what Peter does. It says that in verse 40, Peter sent them all out. I don't know why he did. But I find it interesting, if you compare this account in Acts chapter 9, verse 40, with Mark chapter 5, verse 40 and 41, you have an interesting comparison. Remember that Peter saw Jesus raise three people from the dead. And those resurrections happened at different points in the burial process. For example, you've got Lazarus in John chapter 11, who is already in the tomb and has been dead 4 days and is resurrected by Jesus. You then have a burial outside the village of Nain, in the widow of Nain, and she is on the way to the grave. They've had the wake, if you will, the visitation, and they are on their way to the graveside, and Jesus and the apostles pass the funeral procession on their way to the graveside. He stops and raises the man who is about to be buried. Neither one of those are like the circumstances here. But there is one that is like it. And it was the raising of Jairus' daughter. And in that account, Jesus goes into a home where there is a viewing that's taking place where a young girl has passed away. And it's interesting what Jesus did. Jesus went into the room, said that basically she's not dead, she's sleeping, saying that he's going to resurrect her, is in essence what he's saying by that statement. They all laugh at him. And so he sends them out of the room. And he says, Talitha cum. It basically means, little girl, get up, arise. It's interesting to me that here, if Peter is performing his first resurrection, that he's doing so in a circumstance very similar to what he saw his Lord did, and he basically did the exact same thing his Lord did. His Lord showed up, moved everybody out of the room, resurrected the little girl, displayed her to her family. So what does Peter do? He shows up in the room, he dismisses everybody from the room, and guess what he says? It's interesting, if you look at the words in Aramaic, that when Jesus said for the little girl, said the word little girl, he said the word Talitha. When Peter spoke to Dorcas, he said Tabitha. Both in English and in Aramaic, there's only one letter difference. One said little girl, the other said little gazelle. Jesus in Aramaic said arise, Peter in Greek said arise. But he did and said almost exactly the same thing. When he was faced with that situation, he just imitated his Lord, it seems. And isn't that a great way to live life? When you face a situation and you don't know what to do, you've never been here before, just imitate your Lord. If you look down in verse 41, it says then that he presented her alive and it became known all over Joppa and many believed. Remember, the purpose of the miracles are to cause people to have faith in Christ Jesus, for people to believe. I want you to think about the things that were on display here. First of all, the widows displayed the garments to Peter. I want you to think about that God displayed grace to the people of Joppa and those widows by raising Tabitha back to life. And then think about how God was put on display to that whole community. And many believed because of it. We would take out your psalm books and turn to the hymn of encouragement. And as you turn there, I want you to think about, first of all, what are our deeds? What are the habits of our lives? What do people know us for? Is our habit, our way of living, to think about ourselves first or others first? Second of all, are we ready for our death? Tabitha was ready to die. I don't know how old she was, but she was ready because she was a Christian, which meant she had expressed her faith in repentance, confession, and baptism, had put on Christ, and had her sins washed away. And then based on the evidence of Acts chapter 9, 36 and following, she was living her life trying to be like her Lord. She was ready to die. The people weren't ready to let her go. And isn't that how you ought to live? Live such a life like Jesus that people are sad to see you go. The question for us is, are we ready to die? And then the third question is, what will they display at our funeral? Done a lot of funerals in my lifetime. You talk to Wendell and John, they've done far more than I have. But I think they'll tell you that basically at a funeral, you're just telling stories. You're telling God's story of His grace, His kindness, His compassion, His hope. And you're telling the story of the person who passed away. All you're doing is saying, here's what this person was like. Here's what they chose to do with their lives. When that person is a child of God, it's a very easy story to tell. When you're doing a funeral sermon, you want to do two things. Number one, first of all, you want to tell the truth. And number two, you want to encourage the family. And so to tell the truth, sometimes in the lives of some people, you can't tell the whole story. Because when you tell everything that's in that person's life, it's going to break that family's heart because they're not ready for God. So my question is, what kind of sermon are we writing? Because whoever does our funeral is not writing the sermon. All they're doing is reading the script that we wrote in the story of our lives. What will they display at our funeral? And what they display may depend on what we do right now as we stand and sing.